Before we begin, just a quick note. If this conversation about alcohol, identity, and desire resonates, my new book, What Are You Thirsty For? Rethinking Alcohol and the Life You Want, is out now. And if you want to go deeper, slowly, thoughtfully, and in ways that genuinely nourish you, I've opened the Thirsty For More Mindset Lab on Substack. You'll find links to both in the show notes. Right. Let's get on with the episode. Welcome to the Big Drink Rethink, the podcast for anyone questioning their relationship with alcohol or simply wondering what more life might hold. I'm Anna Donaghy, alcohol mindset coach, author, and former strategist. And each episode is going to blend lived experience, psychological insight, and powerful tools to help you understand your habits and gently rethink your drinking in a way that throws open oodles of possibilities. So whether you're trying to quit, cut down, or you're just plain curious, then you are in the right place. Let's rethink things together and explore what you're really thirsty for. Hey, welcome back to the Big Drink Rethink. Right. Last episode, I had Evan Cudsworth on, and we got into talking about the role alcohol plays at parties, not just in your glass, in terms of what you're holding and what you're drinking, but in the architecture of socializing and parties as a whole, the permission it gives people, the social glue that it is, and the way, obviously, a room of sober people at 11 o'clock in the evening looks very different to a room full of drunk people. Now, I got loads and loads of messages after that episode, so genuinely thank you. But the message I kept getting is, you know, in different forms, different words, albeit, was, great, but what do I do? What do I actually do? Because obviously, you know, going to parties and not drinking, going to parties when you're only just in your early stages of not drinking, is daunting. Understanding why alcohol is baked into our social rituals is interesting. It's fascinating. You know, it genuinely is useful. But when you're standing in your mate's kitchen on a Saturday night, holding a sparkling water with a bit of lime in it, feeling like you're wearing a high-vis jacket in a room full of people, you don't need a sociology lecture. You need a game plan. So that's what today is. Okay, practical, specific, a few things that actually work. And a few things that might sound like they work, but they really don't. Okay, so let's go. The first thing to say, and this is often overlooked, it's the bit that people skip, is that there is a before bit to going to a party and not drinking, and don't skip it. People who struggle most at parties without alcohol tend to walk in completely unprepared. And I don't mean, you know, unprepared like they forgot to charge their phone or something. I mean, they've done zero mental groundwork for the evening. They've just arrived and hoped for the best. And sometimes that's fine. Sometimes you can walk into a room, you see people you love, connection follows, you forget you're not drinking and you know, you're home at midnight feeling great. But sometimes, especially if you're newer to this, or if you're in a phase of genuinely questioning a relationship with alcohol rather than being fully committed to not drinking, sometimes you need a bit more than hope. Because hope is not a plan. I hope this party goes well is not a game plan. So there is a bit before, and there are a few bits to this, I think. So the number one, know your why for tonight. Now, you're likely to have a big philosophical why, the reasons you're questioning or changing your drinking. So something like, I'm rethinking my relationship with alcohol because I've realized it's damaging my relationships, or I want to have a better, you know, relationship, or I want to be a better role model for my kids, or just the realization that it's taking more than it gives and you're not going to put up with this anymore. So I always encourage an understanding of that high level why, but it's good to have a why for the night of the party too. And it can be small. It can feel really small. I want to feel good tomorrow morning. I want to feel proud tomorrow morning. I've got a big week and I want to feel sharp going into it. And actually, sometimes I'm just curious, you know, I'm curious to see what it's like to party without alcohol. And that's enough. You just have to have something to hold on to when 10 o'clock rolls around and, you know, someone's opening a really nice bottle of Burgundy and looking at you with puppy eyes because they want a drinking partner to validate their drinking. So don't skip consideration of your why for the evening, because it's something to come back to in those moments. Now, the second thing is preparing calmly. This sounds really basic, but don't arrive frazzled. It sounds almost too obvious to say, but so many difficult party experiences start not at the party, but in the 20 minutes before it. The scramble to find something to wear, the taxi or the Uber that says it's 3 minutes away whilst you're doing your mascara and then doesn't come for flipping ages. You know, the things that can really wind you up, and that sort of arriving slightly late energy that means you can spend the first half an hour there just trying to unwind. Now, when you're drinking, none of that really matters because you have a glass of something in your hand within minutes, and that does help to soften the edges. But without alcohol, you're working really with whatever internal state you walked in with. So it's worth protecting that state. Give yourself a buffer when you're getting ready. Get ready earlier than you need to. Sit quietly for 5 minutes before you leave. And I'm not talking necessarily about meditation or anything like that, but just take a moment to settle yourself before you arrive at the party, because you want to walk through that door already feeling calm, already feeling like you, not like someone who's been sort of running to catch up since 5:30 in the afternoon. The third thing I would say is have a drink in your hand within 30 seconds of arriving. Now, that sounds almost comically minor, but it's not. I've talked recently about the glass in hand being a social prop. Well, it is. But likewise, an empty hand is a magnet for can I get you a drink, obviously, which is fine, other than it opens up a conversational detour that you'll have 100 times that night. Now, if you arrive and immediately find yourself something to drink, something nice, and we'll get onto that in a minute, you know, you sidestep that whole conversation. You look like someone who already has a drink, because you do. And you look like someone who doesn't need to have a conversation about drinking, because you really don't. All right. And number four, have an exit plan. Yes, an exit plan before you even get there. Not because you're planning on leaving early, necessarily, although you might. Not because you're planning for an unenjoyable evening, but because knowing you can leave, that you're not trapped, changes everything about how you feel once you're there. Drive yourself if you can. Certainly, this is a big one, don't rely on taxi shares with the people in the room that, you know, most likely to want to stay longest and leave latest. This is not defeatist, by the way, having an exit plan before you go. This is just giving yourself options. So that's the early stuff, okay? That's the early stuff. Now let's actually talk about the drink situation, because this matters more than people think. There is a version of not drinking at parties that I kind of think of as basically performative suffering. It involves holding a glass of tap water with no ice and a vaguely martyred expression, and it makes everyone around you feel slightly uncomfortable and slightly guilty, and it's not fun for anyone. Don't do that, unless that is your drink of choice, unless that is genuinely your drink of choice. There's also a version where you've put genuinely zero thought into what you're going to drink. So you end up sipping warm lemonade out of a plastic cup all night, or warm orange juice. And by 9 o'clock, you're bored of it and feeling slightly nauseous. Also not great. What actually works is having a drink you really, really enjoy. And so this is, of course, worth putting some thought into in advance. A few things here. Non-alcoholic alternatives have genuinely become very, very good. In most cases, that sad alcohol-free section at the back of the supermarket has been transformed. And I would actually argue that it's now where the innovation and the interest sits. So if you haven't looked recently, look again. There are some genuinely excellent non-alcoholic alternatives now, things that feel ceremonial, things that feel ritualistic, things that feel like a treat. And that matters, because part of what we're replacing here, of course, isn't the alcohol. It is the ritual. It is the thing you hold. It is the thing you sip and the thing that you actually enjoy. So make sure you have that with you. Stick it in the fridge before you go out if it needs chilling, or, you know, hand it to the host and ask them to do that if that's the format. And that brings us to the next point. You do not have to explain your drink. This is a big one. You are allowed to ask the host to chill your non-alcoholic drink, and then you're allowed to stand and drink it without giving anyone a TED talk about it. "I'm not drinking tonight" is a complete sentence that does not need follow-up. You don't owe anyone your story. And honestly, most people are barely registering what's in your glass. They're thinking about themselves, as people do. And if someone does push it, if, you know, some knobber will, you just have to kind of say something like, "I'm good, thanks." And that's it. Warm, confident, closed. And if they push it further, which is genuinely quite rude of them, "I'm taking a breather" or "I'm driving," obviously requires no further discussion. Use it without guilt. Also, the factually correct and rather facetious line is, "I am drinking, just not alcohol," whilst waving your glass in their face is also making a good point that there are many types of drinks in this world and alcohol is but one. All right. Okay, so you've got your drink. Now the social bit, this is where it gets interesting. You've arrived, you've got your drink, and now you actually have to be at the party. And here's the thing that nobody tells you, which I think is maybe the most important thing in this entire episode. Sober you is more present than drunk you, and that is both a gift and a challenge. And here's what I mean. When you're drinking, there's a kind of social anesthesia that kicks in. So the slightly awkward moments don't feel quite as awkward. And the person who's monopolizing the conversation and is boring the pants off everyone doesn't irritate you quite as much. The small talk feels fine because your brain is slightly fuzzy and time passes differently. Now, without alcohol, you feel everything more, which means the good stuff is genuinely better. The real conversations, the moments that actually matter, the things you'll actually remember. But the bad stuff is also more noticeable. The boring conversations really can feel and are quite boring. And the performative chat feels much more hollow. So what do you do with that? Because that is the bit that most people fear. First of all, seek out the real conversations. They're always there. At every party, if you go looking, they are always there. They're usually happening slightly away from the main cluster of the room. They're happening in the kitchens. They're happening between two people who've managed to find a corner and are actually talking. Alcohol-fueled parties have this kind of centrifugal force and everyone gets pulled in towards the loud center. You, with all your faculties, can resist that and go and find the actual interesting conversations. And a really understated and underrated superpower of sobriety in those interesting conversations is just ask questions. Asking good questions. Well, actually, it's not just a sober party survival tactic. It's just lovely conversational manners. It's one of the most generous things you can do for another person, to be genuinely curious about them, to make them feel interesting, to signal with a single question that you actually want to know the answer. We've somehow lost this bit. You know, conversations have become increasingly competitive and two people can just stand there and all they're doing is waiting for their turn to speak. They're not actually listening. And the person who bucks that trend is magnetic. People leave conversations with a good questioner feeling energized and feeling seen, often without knowing why. So there's a baseline case for asking better questions that's got actually nothing to do with alcohol at all. But it does happen to be especially useful when you're sober at a party because people who are drinking are often performing. They're holding court. They're telling the story they always tell. They're laughing too loudly. And you, with your full attention intact, can ask the questions that cut through, not in an annoying, kind of therapy adjacent sort of way, but just genuinely curious. So what's going on with you at the moment? That tends to stop people in their tracks in the best possible way. Suddenly, you're not necessarily at a party, you're just two people actually talking. And the other lovely thing about this, if you're the person who actually gets to remember things, is these conversations do actually help you to get to know people better. It's a small thing, but it obviously compounds. It is the way of extending your social circle, getting to know people better. When you're sober at a party and someone tells you something like their kid's name, or the things they're worried about at work, or I don't know, the trip they're planning, where they're going this summer, then 3 weeks later you remember it and you can ask about it. That's worth more than 100, you know, slightly slurred, oh, we should do dinner sometime sort of nonsense. Sober presence is actually a really good social advantage. All right, but there are awkward moments. There will be some. Someone will make a go on, just have one sort of joke. Someone will actually act slightly weird about the fact that you're not drinking, as though your sobriety is a commentary on their choices, which, by the way, sometimes it is from their perspective, even if it's not from yours, but that's their stuff to carry, not yours, okay? So the best approach in those situations, in those moments, I've found is warmth and lightness, not defensiveness, not a lecture, just a smile and a subject change. Ha, no, I'm good. Thank you. No, I'm fine. So tell me, where did you say you're going this summer? Redirect. Move on. Don't make it a thing and it won't become a thing. Now let's have a think about the actual general structure of parties, because this is worth noticing. Parties have an arc. It's worth having a rough timeline awareness, because challenges aren't necessarily evenly distributed. This is all part of the planning. Knowing when those challenges are likely to come really helps. Quick run through. First hour, easy. Everyone's relatively sober. Conversation is actually happening. People are probably eating things. You feel fine. Yes, you need to navigate the can I get your drink conversation and the what are you drinking questions, but we've just covered how to move through those unapologetically and quickly. I go back to that point. Don't make a thing of it and it won't become a thing. At the end of the day, and certainly by the end of this party, people are going to be far more interested in themselves than you. Things will move on. That's hour one. Hour two, still fine, and maybe even still good. If you've found your people in the room and you're having a good conversation, this can genuinely be the best part of the night. You're present, you're funny, you're enjoying it. Hour three, this is where it gets wobbly, not for you necessarily, but around you. The drunk gap, as I call it, is starting to open up. I don't really need to explain what I mean by that. It's just that people who've been drinking for 3 hours are in a different gear to you. Their conversation is getting louder and less coherent, and the person who's been drinking heavily starts repeating themselves, and generally, you know, the energy shifts. This is the moment where a lot of people who are not drinking start to feel left behind, like the party is happening to everyone else and not to them. Here's what I want to say about that moment, because this is the big pinch point. It is a sign, not a sentence. It's a sign that the party has probably peaked. It's a sign that the next 2 hours are probably going to be full of diminishing returns. You do not have to stay. This is a sign that it might be time to go. Do I want to stay for the tail end of this? Or do I want to go home feeling good? There is absolutely nothing wrong with leaving at this point. You don't have to endure anything. Getting home at midnight, having had 3 or 4 hours of a genuinely good time, is a better outcome than grinding until about 2 a.m., feeling increasingly flat and invisible. So this goes back to my point about having an exit plan. Let that include a kind of a notional time to leave. Not a rigid curfew, obviously. This has all got to be based on how you feel. But just a rough sense of, if I'm not feeling it by X, like 11 p.m., that's my cue. Give yourself permission to use it. Now, just a few words on the internal experience of stuff inside your head, because the practical stuff obviously only goes so far. If you're newer to navigating parties without drinking, there's often a background sort of sense of self-consciousness, a kind of low-level monitoring. Is this weird? Do I look weird? Are people noticing? Am I being boring? It's this kind of internal narrative, and I want to name that because pretending that it isn't there doesn't help. But I promise you, that voice gets quieter. The first few parties without drinking can feel like you're doing something vaguely transgressive, like you've opted out of a social contract that everyone else has signed. And there's a reason it feels so visible. Psychologists call it the spotlight effect, which is essentially our tendency to massively overestimate how much other people are noticing us. We think we're standing in a beam of light, every single choice that we have made illuminated and scrutinized. We think that people are noticing what we're drinking, that we're declining drinks, the fact that we're still coherent at 11 o'clock. We assume that everyone has clocked it and is forming opinions. They haven't. They really, really haven't. They are too busy worrying about whether they're being noticed. The spotlight, it turns out, is almost entirely in our own heads. And it's burning at about 10 times the wattage of anything anyone else is actually directing at us. Now, I talked about this recently in an episode with Rye Gavin a few episodes back, this whole kind of sense of self-consciousness that comes with stepping outside the norm. And it is worth revisiting here because it's so relevant in these party settings. Because at some point, and it is different for everyone, it really is, but you just stop caring as much. All the caring feels less important than the other stuff. That sense of a spotlight does dim. Not because the world is changing, but because you stop feeding it. Your inner narrative stops feeding that self-consciousness. And it's not something I can give you a timeline on, but I promise you it does happen. And second, what you're really monitoring isn't what other people think of you, it's what you're okay with, okay? Whether you're enough, whether you're interesting and likable and worth being in the room without the social lubrication. And that question, am I enough as I am, is more about what you think of you. And that's not actually a question about parties, that's a question about identity. And it's worth sitting with. It's worth sitting with that. Am I enough as I am? The answer is yes. The answer is yes. And that's worth being curious about and exploring, not at someone's birthday party on a Saturday night, but in general. The party obviously isn't the place to resolve the existential question. The party's just the party. Show up, be yourself, and see what happens. And thirdly, and this is something that I kind of, I don't know, this connects to something I come back to a lot on this show. Alcohol was never actually doing what you thought it was doing. It wasn't making you funnier. It wasn't making the conversation better. It was just lowering your inhibitions enough that you stopped worrying about whether you were funny or whether the conversation was any good. And here's a slightly confronting bit. The worry was always yours. The alcohol was just that volume knob on the anxiety, which means the work, if you want to do the work, is on that anxiety itself, on the self-trust, on building the internal architecture that means you don't need the volume knob in the first place. But that's a bigger project than just one episode, okay? But knowing that that's a project, that's useful, really useful. Now, finally, a word on the morning after, a quick one. But it does deserve its own moment. The morning after a party where you didn't drink is genuinely wonderful, and I don't think we talk about it enough. You wake up and you remember everything. You wake up and you feel like a person, okay? You wake up without the low-grade dread, without the did I say something weird, did I overshare, did I upset anybody, did I make a tit of myself? You know, that reel that plays on loop when you can't remember the night before. And then the two-day anxiety hangover that some of us know all too well. But there's something else as well. The party itself often looks better the morning after. The conversations you had feel more real, more you. The connections that you made, they feel more solid. The funny moments that were genuinely funny are actually really funny in the retelling. And I think this is one of the most underrated arguments for navigating parties without alcohol. Not the health stuff, not the productivity stuff, just this. You actually get to keep the good bits. They're yours. You were there. You were present. You showed up. They're yours, okay? So the recap. Quick recap. Before the party, know your small why for the night. Arrive calm, or at least not frazzled. Have a plan for what you're drinking and take it, and give yourself an exit, or have an exit strategy that includes a notional time. And I genuinely think that 3-hour point is pretty good. It works fairly consistently. And importantly, travel independently, all right? So you're not dependent on anyone else. At the party, have a drink in your hand within 30 seconds of arriving. Have a response to the initial awkward questions, although I do insist that the more confidently you respond to these, the less time you need to spend in them. Seek out the real conversations, and they're in the corners and around the edges, not the center. Ask better questions. Be genuinely curious about people. And you do not owe anyone an explanation for what's in your glass. When it gets hard, the drunk gap, which opens up around hour 3, decide consciously whether to stay. Remember that "I'm good, thanks, I've got a drink" is a complete sentence deserving of no further explanation, and warmth and redirection work over defensiveness. Remember that many things are in your head, and that self-consciousness gets quieter, often over the course of the party, but certainly over the course of many parties. The party is not the place to resolve the existential questions. That is an important one. And remember, you are always, always enough. The alcohol is just the volume knob on the self-doubt. Now, here's the thing I want to leave you with. Navigating parties without alcohol isn't really about the party. It's about proving something to yourself, a little bit at a time, that you can do it, that you are fine, that you're actually, truth be told, better. And then after a while, it stops being about proving anything at all. It's just about how you are at parties now. And that shift from effortful to effortless is really well worth working towards. If last week's episode with Evan was about understanding the culture, why parties are built the way they are, what alcohol is actually doing in that ecosystem, then think of today as your field guide, the practical bit, the stuff you can actually do on a Saturday night. Now go try it and come back and tell me how it went. Email me, anna@thebigdrinkrethink.com. Okay? So yeah, I am Anna, this is The Big Drink Rethink, and I will see you next time. Thank you for listening and getting curious. Please rate, review, and follow this podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you're choosing to listen. It really helps other people find the show. And don't forget to tune in to the next episode. And you can find all of my resources and become part of The Big Drink Rethink by heading to my website, thebigdrinkrethink.com.